Welcome back to a new episode of the Money Train podcast. Today, we'll talk about markets, the next trends, and also people that are actually shaping our future of investing. Today's guest is Cathy Wood, founder, CEO, and chief investment officer of ARK Investment, known for her focus on disruptive technologies and high conviction strategies. She has become one of the most talked about figures in the investment world. Cathy, thank you very much for your time and welcome on the show. Before we go into detail, I would like to have a little look on the global markets today. What's your outlook on the global economy and market cycle right now at the moment?
Well, at the moment, we know that the first half of the year was characterized by a lot of turmoil emanating from the United States around tariffs and around geopolitical as well. And I think what's going on is the President Trump and his administration made the decision to get all of the tough work from their point of view, or the bad news from the market's point of view, out as soon as possible after they started the administration on January 20th. And so there's been, it's felt chaotic and on both sides in the United States and elsewhere in the world. I think the objective was by this fall to have tariffs, the tax package, and lots of deregulation in place so that the economy and the stock market would take off as we enter the campaign season for the midterm elections next year. President Trump does not want to be a lame duck. And he knows that he's going to be judged on two things. He judges himself on two things, the economy and the stock market. And we believe the equity market's beginning to understand this and has been rising. We call it a wall of worry throughout all of the chaos. We've seen markets around the world rising with the expectation, we think, that the economy is going to move out of what has been a rolling recession here in the United States into a rolling recovery that will pick up momentum thanks to new technologies that are exploding today. I mean, the ChatGPT moment launched it, but will drive productivity. So very healthy, real growth, and low inflation. That's probably the biggest surprise. Many people associate real growth with inflation. History would suggest otherwise. The stronger the growth, the higher the productivity, the lower the inflation. So we think we're heading into really good times.
That sounds very good. Great times ahead. I would like to talk a little bit more about the tariffs. I mean, you just described it as very chaotic, which is probably the best word how you could describe it, what actually happened in the last few months. But we just saw him to announce new tariffs on a few countries. The EU, for example, now 30% on everything or all the imports in the US. But the markets actually haven't showed that big of a reaction. Do you think that people are a little fed up by him right now, and because they do know that Trump is going to talk about it before he actually is going to do something?
Yes, I think the markets have said, okay, he can say this, but it's all part of a negotiation. And I think at the end of the day, when all is said and done, we're going to be very interested in learning how much of the tariff increases are offset by a drop in non-tariff trade barriers, allowing the free flow of goods much more than we have seen historically. So we don't have the full story. We know there's a huge negotiation taking place behind the scenes. And I think the market's just saying, all right, this is a negotiation. Let's see what finally happens, not just on the tariff front, but on the non-tariff trade barrier front, and how much this administration is or is not encouraging truly free and fair trade.
What do you think are actually the biggest risks, but also biggest opportunities for investors right now for the next 12 to 24 months?
Yes, well, we know that AI is here, and it is, we do not believe it's hype. We believe it's a profound technological revolution that's taking place. And of course, many people, when they concluded, many investors, when they included or when they thought about AI, their first response was in the chip sector. So NVIDIA, TSM. And we think they'll be fine stocks, but we think the bigger opportunities, meaning they're not as well understood, are in the embodied AI space. And by that we mean AI as it impacts the physical world. We think the biggest application of AI is in the autonomous mobility realm. Many people know that as robo-taxis. And we think that is during the next 5 to 10 years that will scale to an $8 to $10 trillion opportunity globally for the entire ecosystem, with the biggest beneficiaries, the network providers, accounting for half of that. So $4 to $5 trillion in revenue from essentially nothing now. The biggest robo-taxi network out there, we believe, will be Tesla. Now, it is not yet. Waymo really has that mantle. But we believe that Waymo's solution is too high cost, and that it will give way to Tesla's lower cost solution over time. We think that the autonomous opportunity will submit to natural geographic monopolies. We don't know who that will be in Europe or China. We know Pony AI and others are going for it, nor do we know what it will be in Japan. We know that Tesla would like to enter those markets, but in this world, it's winner take most. The company getting passengers from point A to point B the fastest, the safest, and the least expensively is probably going to win. So lots of markets are up for grabs there. So that's the first embodied AI opportunity. The second is in healthcare. We think that the most profound applications of AI during the next 5 to 10 years are going to be in healthcare. We see already that there are diagnostic tools, diagnostic tests that are able to identify and diagnose cancer in stage one. We're seeing this in one of our private companies, Freenome, able to use blood tests to diagnose colorectal cancer in stage one. We have other tests out, the testing companies out there, Exact Sciences, Guardant Health, also in the run for that competition. We see research and discovery being transformed by AI. AI is going to shrink the time from conception to market to create a new drug from 13 years on average now to 8 years and ultimately 5 years, we believe. And what's been very gratifying here in the United States is the FDA, the top regulator, is aiming to help with that process. So it is blessing the use of AI in research and discovery. And we also think that the cost of discovering a new drug, including all the failures, will drop from $2.4 billion for one drug down to 600 million, which is going to transform healthcare. And then the third general category that we think is going to transform healthcare is curing disease. So the convergence of various sequencing technologies with artificial intelligence and new technologies like CRISPR gene editing and other gene therapies is already starting to cure diseases, sickle cell disease and beta thalassemia. So CRISPR Therapeutics has launched those two products, and they have already started generating revenues and curing people. So these are profound changes that we don't think investors have priced correctly into the market yet.
Well, these are some extremely interesting topics. We are definitely going to talk about Tesla again a little later, though, because I want to get in cancer research, what you just mentioned. I mean, it's a big field, it's an interesting field, but it's also a very important field of research in the next month or years, for example. I just look up a study from the International Agency for Cancer Research, which estimated cancer death in 2022 at around 9.7 million. But with an upward trend, they actually project the number of cancer deaths in 2050 at about 18.5 million, which is, well, incredibly high. So specifically in this, in this topic, cancer research, do you think we're going to see a lot of 10-bagger companies that are actually right at the start now?
Yes, actually. I think those numbers will be wrong ultimately if this convergence that I mentioned is correct. The convergence among sequencing technologies, AI, and gene editing. So sequencing technologies are becoming so good that we can sequence one cell in a human body. We have 35 to 40 trillion cells in our body, each one of us. And to think that we can analyze cells down to the one cell level is phenomenal. But we need AI to converge with sequencing, and that is happening now. So the sequencing companies include Illumina and Pacific Biosciences. The AI companies that are helping with this convergence, not only convergence of genomic data, but electronic health record data, include Tempus AI, which went public very recently. And in our private portfolio, it's Freenome. And then CRISPR gene editing, there are three major companies that we're focused on in the editing space. So that's CRISPR Therapeutics, Intellia, and Beam, which is in the base editing. I emphasize that convergence because that is why that 18 million number will probably be wrong. We're going to diagnose cancers in stage one, and maybe even before stage one, because the body sets up in a certain way for cancer, and we're beginning to understand, thanks to AI and sequencing technologies, how that happens. And then if we catch the cancer early, there is something called MRD, minimal residual disease. And again, there are many companies working on this. I mentioned Exact Sciences, Guardant Health, Natera's another one. MRD is where after a diagnosis of cancer, a patient will then go into get a test, a blood test. This is blood tests. It's not invasive biopsies to determine whether the cancer is recurring. And these tests can capture that answer anywhere from 9 to 20 months sooner than imaging tests. So they're very, very important, and they're becoming better over time. So that way we'll be able to manage cancer and maybe turn it from a killer into a chronic disease, much like what has happened in the HIV space. So I think a lot of technologies are coming together to attack cancer. And of course, the large pharma and biotech companies are capitalizing on immunotherapies. So actually using our own immune systems to counteract or to fight and kill cancer. For some reason, our immune systems don't tune in when it comes to cancer. But now the large biotech companies are stimulating our own immune systems to fight cancer. And of course, almost all of the large biotech companies are focused on that space.
Well, incredibly interesting topic, of course. You've talked about autonomous cars, autonomous robots. Sure, we all know about Waymo, but we do know Waymo is losing money. And we all know about Tesla, of course, probably one of the most talked stocks ever, also with the CEO, yes. Elon Musk, one of the most talked about celebrity CEOs ever. Before we go into detail, just if you look at Tesla right now in its state, in its current state, what do you think about Tesla right now?
So I think the most important comment there is to recognize that Tesla is not an EV, an electric vehicle company. Sure, it is that, but if we're right, more than 90% of its valuation in 5 years is going to be a function of robo-taxis. And just to illustrate how profound a change that is, electric vehicles, right now, Tesla's electric vehicle gross margins are in the teens, the mid-teens. If we're right, the robo-taxi market is more like a SaaS market, software as a service, and those margins will be in the 80% plus range. That's gross margins. Not only that, EVs are, you know, one and done sales, whereas robo-taxis will be a recurring revenue model, which is a much higher valuation model. Then the other thing that I think not many investors are incorporating into their longer term forecasts, to the extent they have longer term forecasts, is humanoid robots. When you think of Tesla and robo-taxis, what we're talking about is the convergence among robots. So autonomous vehicles are robots. Energy storage, they will be electric because those costs are continuing to fall. And artificial intelligence. Autonomous taxis are powered by AI. So that's a convergence of three technologies. And Tesla is definitely in the lead there. Well, humanoid robots are the convergence of the same three technologies. And if Tesla is in the lead on robo-taxis, which we believe it is, both primarily from a cost point of view, we think its robo-taxis are going to be the lowest cost in the market. Waymo has done a magnificent job, but its cost structure is just way too high. It's forced to depend on other automakers who need to take a cut of profits. And it includes too many sensors, including LiDAR. Tesla has 9 sensors, really 9 cameras. I think the number of sensors on each Waymo is in the 20s, so much higher cost structure. And at the end of the day, the winners in any tech space are those that ride down the learning curves associated with technology that drive costs down. And we think Tesla's in the lead position there.
Do you have any calculations about how many robo-taxis we might see at the end of the decade in America?
Well, the way we look at Tesla today is, and this is a global look, but it has 7 million robots on the road already today. And of course, Tesla's getting data back from them every day. I have two of them. I have a Y and a 3 roaming around the roads of Florida and Connecticut, sending data back to Tesla all the time. And so that data advantage is enormous globally right now. So 7 million today. In the US, at the end of the decade, we would not be surprised to see many more than 7 million robots just in the US in a robo-taxi fleet. Now, each of us can join that fleet or that fleet concept by putting our own cars into the Tesla network. It might start out that way with Model Ys, especially the most advanced Model Ys. But we think over time, this model will migrate to a fleet model with a number of very big fleet companies riding on top of the Tesla network.
Maybe we can project the same thing on the humanoid robots. I mean, we do know Tesla had a very great start with the robotaxi. Actually, it worked. It worked very, very well. Almost no accidents or anything. But we do know it took significantly longer than Musk actually announced years ago. I mean, we do that. Mr. Musk's timeframes are always a little small. But do you think we will see the same pattern of development also in robotics? I mean, he actually made a bold statement last year. He said in 2040 there will be around 10 billion humanoid robots in the world. Do you think that that's a goal or a target they can achieve?
Well, it's very interesting. You're absolutely right, Eric. On the robo-taxi side, Elon believed that Tesla would be in the market by 2017 or 18. And of course, that did not happen. But what did happen was FSD. I think he realized he needed a lot more data and a lot more advances in AI to bring the robo-taxi vision to reality. Interestingly, Waymo commercialized in 2018, and yet I think it has fewer than 2,000 cars or robots on the road. Their rides are delightful. I've taken rides in Waymos in both San Francisco and Los Angeles, and they're delightful. They're geofenced, and the data that Waymo is getting every day from its robo-taxis is much lower than what Tesla is providing. And you're right also, the robo-taxi launch in June in Austin, Texas, started very well. And now Elon is talking about California and Arizona. So I think the confidence level is increasing dramatically here. Now, when it comes to humanoid robots, I think all of us, maybe including Elon, have been surprised by how quickly they are evolving. But it is for the reason I just described. It's the convergence of three technologies that Elon and team have evolved beautifully: the robots, energy storage, and artificial intelligence. From our research, we believe that the humanoid robot market is a $26 trillion revenue opportunity in the next 10 to 15 years. And what's happening is that Elon is progressing in the humanoid robot market. And I would say the Chinese are, and Figure AI here in this country, another private company in our venture fund, they are all moving faster than we expected. And I think it is because of what we've learned from the robo-taxi movement. So We think that half of that 26 trillion is in the home and half in manufacturing. And we wouldn't be surprised to see billions. I don't know if it'll be 10 billion, but to see billions by the year 2040.
If we talk about Tesla, we of course have to talk about Elon Musk. I mean, we already talked a little bit about him, but we do know about his political engagement in the last month, also especially in the last election, of course, where he endorsed the Republicans and where he endorsed Trump. I mean, after the election, it actually went extremely well for Tesla. Right now, Musk is still involved in politics. He actually announced his new party, the America Party, and there are getting voices louder and louder over the last few weeks that his engagement in anything but Tesla is actually becoming a little bit too strong, and that his focus is not on the company as it should be. Do you think Musk could actually become a threat to Tesla, or do you think he's actually right there where he has to be?
Well, I think in terms of starting his own party, what he's actually done is said, you know, Republicans, Democrats, you know, they were all his fans, Democrats when he was saving us from an environmental disaster, Republicans when he backed Trump. And now basically he's basically saying, I'm pulling away from all of this and changing the subject. So I think it's actually going to be good for Tesla. And I think it's his way of ironically pulling away from the political divide, frankly. You know, a lot of people are saying, oh, isn't he distracted by this, that, or the other? We've been getting that question since the moment we started following and owning Tesla. And if you've followed Elon, first of all, you've learned that he's probably the most productive human being on the planet. And his modus operandi is identifying opportunities, technologically enabled innovation that is going to transform the world, figuring out a strategy, setting milestones and timelines. And when one of his companies starts falling short, that's when he moves in and gets very focused on the pain point. So it was Model 3 production during production hell in 2018 and 19. It was robotaxis, so AI, for the last few years. Now it's that and humanoid robots. And of course, his other companies, if you look, we just learned today that Falcon X has just flown its 500th mission. Think about that. Falcon X failed, and now has had 500 successful flights. So in this world of AI, the milestones are very important, and there's a lot of failure up front. And it's like lots of technologies move fast and break things and then get better and then have a stream of successes. So I think that's the model that Elon understands is taking place. And the other very interesting thing about all of his companies is they are all throwing out into his ecosystem incredible amounts of original proprietary data that nobody else has. And the secret to success in the AI age is proprietary data.
Do we have a specific price target for Tesla for the next years?
Yes, officially our price target for 2030 is $2,600. And I can tell you today it is at $314. Now, that $2,600, however, does not include much, if anything, for humanoid robots. And since we developed that model, our confidence in the humanoid robot success has increased dramatically.
Well, I think I can say we're very, very excited for the future for Tesla.
Yes.
Let's talk Bitcoin. I mean, we've seen a new all-time high over the weekend, $123,000, which is actually a great price. I mean, we've seen a great year for Bitcoin right now. Also, today's Monday, starting the crypto week in the White House. I mean, we do know we have the Trump administration, which is extremely bullish for Bitcoin. I mean, the Democrats are also very bullish on that topic. I mean, they pretty much have to right now. So, I mean, we have seen Bitcoin at $123,000. We also see the fear and greed index in the crypto market, which is actually at greed right now. I mean, it's not a not a huge problem, but investors might get a little bit nervous at the time. What do you think right now about Bitcoin? Where are we standing, actually?
Yes, I think what is happening here, it started with the spot Bitcoin ETFs. We are very proud to have one of the largest here in the United States, ARKB. That began the institutionalization of Bitcoin, the Bitcoin market, and other crypto markets, other digital assets. And I think many people are now tuning into the arithmetic. I actually posted on X, math is math, and math is math then. And what that means is we're at right now roughly 21 million units or Bitcoin having been mined in history. And that number is only going up to 21 million. It cannot go beyond that. And so I think more people are doing the math and saying, oh my goodness, this is a new asset class. I, as an institution, don't have much exposure. Bitcoin has the most secure network, and it's taking advantage of three powerful revolutions. It's a technology revolution, really the next generation of the internet, putting the native currencies into the internet. The developers did not do this in the late 80s, early 90s, when they were evolving the internet, because they didn't know that finance and commerce would take place on the internet. So that's a revolution. It's a global rules-based monetary system, really the first one since the U.S. closed the gold window in 1971. That's a very big idea. And it is a new asset class. And it's that last phenomenon or revolution that is beginning to take hold now, because there's real scarcity value. 1 million more Bitcoin will be mined, and that's it. So scarcity value is scarcity value. And the most interesting thing about Bitcoin is after the halving last year, which means the supply growth of Bitcoin was cut in half to roughly 0.9% on average per year. That dropped the supply growth of Bitcoin below the long-term supply growth of gold. And a lot of people understand the scarcity value when it comes to gold. Bitcoin is going to become more scarce than gold, because unlike gold, Bitcoin cannot respond to an increase in price and mine any more than is mathematically metered now. Gold, however, can respond to the increase in price that it has enjoyed. And we are seeing new mines opening up, the higher cost mines, to try and get more supply out. And I think people are beginning to understand this distinction when it comes to scarcity value.
We've seen a strong year for Bitcoin right now. We've seen a strong last month. We know your price target for Bitcoin for 2030 is actually at $2.4 million. Do you have a target or a goal for Bitcoin for this year? I mean, we've already seen a very strong year. I mean, we got the crypto week ahead, which might do a little more. But yeah, you got any specific target for 2025?
So what I'd like first to is to address the longer term target. So the number you mentioned, somewhere in the 2.4 to 2.9 million range, would be if if investors were to use the optimal allocation towards Bitcoin based on its history. And that, of course, is a big number. I think it's close to 20%. No one's going to do that, at least not now. However, if you look at our Big Ideas 2025, you'll see that our bull case for Bitcoin in 2030 is closer to 1.5 million, still more than tenfold from where we are today. And our confidence has increased as the institutional interest has increased. In terms of a one-year forecast, that's very difficult. We don't do those. However, I will tell you, we have an on-chain analytics expert, David Puel, who has four main indicators right now that are still pointing to a bull market. And we've just had a major breakout. I think many of the technicals were beginning to look a little iffy or shaky, and they have now been cleared. Those hurdles have been cleared. So we think that for the next year that this bull market will remain intact.
Kathy, thank you very much for today.
Pleasure, Eric. Thank you.
Die im Podcast besprochenen Aktien und Fonds stellen keine spezifischen Kauf- oder Anlageempfehlungen dar. Die Moderatoren oder der Verlag haften nicht für etwaige Verluste, die aufgrund der Umsetzung der Gedanken oder Ideen entstehen.